Welcome to Green and Red, scrappy politics for scrappy people, a regular podcast on radical environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Park.
Welcome to the Silky Smooth Sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I am your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. Bob is off on assignment this week, so he is not joining us. But we're going to be talking about a pretty serious thing that happened this week. As you know, the show covers a lot of organizing and direct action, particularly environmental direct action. And so this week in Atlanta, and we'd actually been meaning to have a show on this for a while, and it's just sad that we have to do it because of this event, but a forest defender named Manuel Turan, also known as Tortuguita or Tort, was shot and killed by police on Wednesday when the police were carrying out a violent raid on a protest camp in Atlanta, where this forest defense campaign has been happening, protesting the destruction of the forest and the construction of a police training facility that's known as Cop City. And the campaign had been going on in about 100 acres of a public forest in southeast Atlanta. Vigils for the murdered forest defender have taken place from Oakland to Minneapolis to Charlotte to Chicago. In Atlanta, activists have been holding vigils and are planning a march on Saturday. And so we're going to be joined by Micah, an Atlanta-based organizer, to talk a little bit about what has happened and then also do a little bit of background on Cop City. So Micah, welcome to the Green and Red podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I'm so sorry to hear what's happened. I hope folks are holding up okay there in Atlanta.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It's definitely obviously a rough and terrible time, which is true of any time that the police murder someone. But there's also a lot of righteous anger and outrage at the fact that the police have, you know, taken another life and that they did it in service of trying to, you know, destroy a forest and build a massive playground for cops. So, yeah, definitely a lot going on right now.
Yeah. Maybe you could start off with telling us what you understand has happened or happened on Wednesday.
Yeah, definitely. So a lot of the details have yet to, you know, come forward, and, you know, the full picture is missing, and there are sort of different narratives at play. But what is clear is that on Wednesday morning, a joint police task force that's been convened by local police in Atlanta and DeKalb County, state level police, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation and Georgia State Troopers, and even federal, the FBI. They were conducting what they called a clearing operation, which is really just a raid in the forest on Wednesday morning. And what we know is that during this raid, they shot and killed a forest defender, Tortuguita. And at the same time, a cop was shot non-fatally. The cop was taken to the hospital and stabilized really quickly. Was stabilized. And, you know, they announced relatively quickly that the cop was stable. There were pretty quickly the different narratives that emerged. And the cop narrative changed multiple times. So first they claimed that they had been ambushed with gunfire sort of out of nowhere, and that an officer had been shot and that they were returning fire. Shortly after that, in a press conference, they claimed, in a release, they claimed that they had been in conversation with the forest defender, who then fired at them after refusing verbal commands. And so there's sort of these conflicting stories already from their part. And the GBI has already come out and said that there's no body camera footage of the shooting, and they're not releasing any of the names of the officers involved. So, you know, in terms of the full picture, a lot of the details are murky. Of course, we know that, you know, cops lie all the time, especially after acts of police violence. And then on the other hand, you know, these are also unconfirmed reports. You know, nothing is positive until more information comes out. But some folks from on the ground, there's been some coverage of it, have suggested that it could have been accidental friendly fire between cops, which, you know, would also not be the first time that kind of thing happened.
And when we're talking about like the police, we're talking about like state troopers, you know, this is the state police. And then I've also, my understanding is that it was a SWAT team, correct?
Right, right. So it's, yeah, it's a multi, multi-force task force. So they've got, yeah, they've got all different types of agencies in there. What they are saying on the record is that the team that murdered Tortuguita was all Georgia State Troopers, and Georgia State Troopers don't have body cameras. That, you know, that's their official position.
How convenient.
Right, exactly.
And then this isn't the first time that they've raided this camp.
No.
In this fashion, correct?
Right, right. So they also raided the camp in December. And at that time, I think on that day, in mid-December, they arrested five people. They arrested another person the next day, charged all of them with domestic terrorism just for, you know, living in the forest. They, you know, I'm not a lawyer, but they seem like pretty flimsy charges. And I mean, it's obviously outrageous to, you know, and it's an outrageous attempt to really just scare people and, you know, repress protests to charge these folks with domestic terrorism.
It also seems like the police narrative, which I've noted goes everything from like the Georgia State Police's PR team to Brian Kemp, the governor, basically pushed out that narrative really quick about exchange of gunfire between protester and police. Mm-hmm. And then all the mainstream media has just embraced that, which what I call it copaganda.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if you could just comment on that.
Oh yeah,
and then one thing I just want to say, because I just want to refer to is that New York Times article about this where it used the word firefight.
Right,
the title was just trash,
absolute trash. And I mean that, I think as soon as folks who were not on the ground heard what happened, I think the first thing that everyone is trying to get across, you know, to media is cops lie all the time. Do not just regurgitate their narrative. And of course, you know, so many outlets did immediately. And, you know, it was Brian Kemp, you know, our right-wing, you know, Republican governor. And it was also our Democratic mayor, Andre Dickens, who immediately tweeted, you know, thinking of the police officers, you know, something like that. Nothing about, you know,
some prayers,
literally just been killed. Exactly. And so, yeah, I mean, the propaganda machine was turning along immediately. The AJC, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is our sort of newspaper of record here. And, you know, they've already released an opinion piece today by their opinion editor, you know, denouncing the violence, denouncing the forest defenders, you know, calling them terrorists, that sort of thing. I will say what's actually been interesting is that I think, you know, when I say the movement, I don't mean any one organization, because it's this broad, decentralized, autonomous movement. So I think, you know, just people that broadly make up, you know, the movement of people trying to stop Cop City has been somewhat successful in its messaging, because some of the media coverage has actually already begun to turn a little more skeptical, as GBI has said, oh, you know, conveniently there's no footage. And, you know, at one point they said a gun was recovered from the area, but, you know, have not released any information. You know, they're refusing to release the names of officers involved. It's been interesting to see that, you know, certain, you know, the propaganda is still in full force, of course, but there is some degree to which some members of the media are starting to treat it with a little more skepticism. And I think that that's actually reflecting sort of the strength of the movement rather than any sort of morality on part of, you know, the media.
And so I've seen the it seems like, especially this morning, maybe it was happening sooner, but in like looking at social media and media, it definitely is this sort of narrative around no body cam. At least they've not talked about a gun being recovered. And so what is the state, and we can look at the state in different ways, the state of Georgia or just the state. What have they said that they are doing as far as like investigating what happened? Have they announced an official investigation into what happened, or are they just taking the cop's word for it?
So my understanding is that GBI is going to be investigating. And of course, GBI is part of the task force that, you know, was part of this murder. And so folks are already calling for an independent investigation, you know, a real investigation, because I don't think anyone has faith that, you know, GBI is going to indict itself, you know.
I want to kind of shift a little bit to talking about tort for a moment, and then also just like community and movement response. And so there was a profile piece in the Bitter Southerner mm-hmm. by a pretty established journalist last month. And it quotes Tort as saying, "We've got a lot of support from people who live here. And that's important because we went through nonviolence. We're not going to beat them at violence, but we can beat them in public opinion, in the courts even. This is my home now. We've built a nice community here. It's about reclaiming the parks and public space." I'm wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about the sort of community response and even the movement response outside of Atlanta to this tragedy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say I didn't personally know Tort, but already the stories and sort of the testimonials and the memorials that have been flowing in from folks who did know them have just been so beautiful. The Atlanta Community Press Collective has been collecting stories, and you know, some of those quotes have been, I think, released online. And I think they all just paint a picture of a beautiful soul who was committed to the movement and committed to stopping, you know, environmental extraction and police expansion. Already there's been vigils that have been hosted. There was a vigil last night. There's another vigil planned tonight. There are protests planned. And I know that there have been vigils in cities across the country, and, you know, photos and solidarity has been pouring in from, you know, not even just the US, but the world.
There's one been here every night since it happened.
Yeah.
In the Bay Area.
It truly is, you know, a national and international movement against Cop City.
And actually just talking about Cop City, because we didn't get to this.
Sure.
You know, actually for folks who are just finding out about Cop City, and I've found an alarming number of people who didn't know what it was, actually tell us what Cop City is and why people have been, you know, camped in this forest for almost 2 years fighting it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Cop City is sort of the name that organizers have given to this proposal for a new police training, and it's police and firefighter training and really militarization facility at the site of the Suilani Forest, also sometimes called the South River Forest. And the proposal is essentially, this is city-owned land, to take this land, lease it to this private nonprofit called the Atlanta Police Foundation, and have them develop this massive, you know, building, this massive complex, Cop City, on what is currently forest land. And so it would, you know, destroy this really crucial forest land. This is land that's been referred to as one of the four lungs of Atlanta. It's really, you know, crucial, especially in the midst of environmental catastrophe. And, you know, they would replace it with this facility that, you know, not only has whatever, you know, standard buildings, but would actually include a mock village for police to train in. So things like schools, gas stations, apartment buildings, playgrounds, you know, an area for cops to actually perfect, you know, their deadly urban warfare techniques essentially on people. And, you know, police from all over the country and world would, you know, come to this facility. And so basically this was this proposal had been in the works for several years, but it didn't really gain steam until the summer of 2021, when it sort of really went public. There was an enormous movement against it of, you know, so many people across so many different issues. And of course, you know, city leadership rammed it through anyway. And so ever since then, you know, like you said, folks have been living in the forest, you know, defending it against this destruction, and working to, you know, stop the construction of Cop City, and you know, and move beyond just asking, like, well, if city council said no, you know, does that mean it's over? I think the movement is saying, no, you know, make this project untenable for contractors and, you know, everyone who would be involved, you know, put their reputations on the line, make it clear that this is not what the community wants. You know, so many of these corporations who had their, like, nice statements in 2020 saying, oh, like, you know, we support Black lives and, you know, we're going to take these steps. And then, you know, most of them are funding the Atlanta Police Foundation to actually move forward with this project.
And this forest is in a lower income Black and brown neighborhood, correct?
Yeah, it's a majority Black area. It actually in DeKalb County. And, you know, there was on the day of the vote where city council voted to approve this plan, there were 17 hours of public comment and so many people calling in from the area saying, like, hey, I live in this area. this is the last thing we want. We love, you know, the forest land, the park land, because it's directly adjacent to this public park. You know, so people saying, you know, please don't do this. Meanwhile, the only people who did support it were folks who called in from Buckhead, which is in Northeast Atlanta. It's this really rich white part of Atlanta. And, you know, of course, they don't want it in their neighborhood. They just want it to exist in other people's neighborhoods.
When you look at the board and the supporters of it, I noticed, I was looking at that that yesterday, is we're looking at like the big corporations that are based in Atlanta, like Delta Airlines and Coca-Cola and Home Depot and companies like that. And then, so that kind of makes sense, that sort of, I call it the new Gilded Age. And so the new Gilded Age wants police, the people who are the benefactors of the new Gilded Age want, you know, more effective militarized police.
Right. 100%.
And then just kind of talking about the campaign, I have a couple of questions about the campaign. And just the first one is, like, in the actual forest, like, what are some of the tactics we've seen in trying to discourage and stop the construction, when the construction of the Cop City and destruction of the forest?
Sure. So I think, you know, again, this is a broad, autonomous, decentralized movement. And so there are so many different corners of the movement, so many different, you know, folks within the struggle, individuals, organizations. And I think it's, you know, it's ranged from, you know, the on the ground forest defense of, you know, folks who are living in the forest and saying, you know, you know, construction equipment is not coming in, you know, you're not going to begin this destruction. But it's also so much more. It's, you know, preschoolers in Atlanta who are, you know, who have held several protests of their own, you know, saying, hey, the trees are our future, protect the trees. You know, it's organizations who are filing lawsuits against, you know, this land swap deal on the public parkland that's directly adjacent to where the Cop City would be built. You know, it's folks who are calling city council, calling the mayor, marching. It's people who are, you know, contacting the contractors on the project and pressuring them to pull out and, you know, going directly to contractors and saying, hey, this is, you know, a messed up project that you should not support. And so, you know, I think that often in the media, they're sort of reducing it to just what folks in the forest are doing. And in fact, I think one of the things that, you know, has frequently been published, you know, as what folks on the ground are saying is that, you know, we're all forest defenders and, you know, everyone has a role to play. And this movement really is so, so broad and sort of wide ranging.
Mm-hmm. A frequent guest that we've had on, my good friend and comrade Jake Conroy, was part of SHAC, or the Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty campaign, but they actually used that strategy where they would go after secondary and even tertiary targets of the companies that they were trying to stop.
Right.
I actually think Jake may have even gone to Atlanta in recent times. And I was actually part of an Earth First campaign about 20 years ago, where we also we used that model to put pressure on a different forest defense campaign in Northern California, which was putting pressure on companies connected to the Earth Destroying company.
Right. And also they, you know, the movement successfully got Reeves Young, who was one of the subcontractors on the project, to pull out. And, you know, of course, Reeves Young didn't say that they were pulling out because of the movement. They, you know, gave this sort of canned statement saying, oh, our work is finished anyway. But, you know, it was absolutely a result of the movement. And, you know, I think that, as, you know, now that police have literally murdered someone in the forest, and, you know, so many of these corporations and contractors have blood on their hands, I think that the pressure will only intensify to, you know, to pull out.
Yeah, absolutely. To shift on the target, there's a lot of pressure on, like, elected officials in Atlanta around this too, like the mayor and others. Is that true? Has that been part of the campaign as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that, you know, the mayor has been very closed off to any sort of input from the movement, and has pretty much, you know, has rarely given comment, has shielded himself, sort of seems to be pretending that it's not even happening. But yeah, they are, you know, they're absolutely, you know, targets for pressure.
It seems to me also that, just thinking about the sort of history of campaigns and movements, when things turn into the into a flashpoint, particularly when it hits the level of like sort of crisis flashpoint, which we're seeing right now, that it's also sadly, but also we could potentially see some movement or in some of these institutions, like blinking, essentially.
Yeah.
Hopefully that'll happen.
Sure.
I mean, the one thing I actually wanted to kind of also say about Cop City is I think it's an important intersection of, you know, two of the kind of more visible movements in the world right now, one around racial justice and police brutality, you know, targeting Cop City, and then also the sort of environmental forest defense and climate movements. I've been watching the letter of solidarity that has lots of sign-ons, and it seems like just like so many of these, a lot of mainstream, you know, white-led climate groups are signing on to the statement of solidarity, which I was kind of wondering whether they would balk at it because of of the police narrative around the shooting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, because Cop City, you know, has, you know, if built, it's not going to be built, but if built, it would have, you know, just ramifications on so many levels in terms of environmental impact, human rights, police expansion, gentrification, you know, protection for capital as they continually, you know, take control of Atlanta. And, you know, there's just so many dimensions that I think it is bringing in such a wide range of people, to the extent that, I mean, during the summer of 2021, when, you know, before the legislation had been approved, you even had neighborhood associations releasing resolutions saying like, hey, we don't want this, you know, near our neighborhoods. We don't want this. And so, you know, and then you even have people objecting on the grounds of just like good governance and transparency, where this entire process has been just shrouded in, you know, mystery and secrecy from the very beginning. It was all designed by the Atlanta Police Foundation, you know, at every step of the way, where there's supposed to be community oversight, they've completely undermined it. And so, you know, I think it's been amazing to see how much sort of mainstream involvement there is, because it is just an issue that has such intersectional ramifications.
One other question, just to kind of shift the topic a little bit, is it seems like that there's that intersectionality, and then there's where it's this like sort of broad coalition, broad movement of people from neighborhood associations to people defending the forest in the forest, or people doing home demos, or people doing office visits to some of the contractors, et cetera. And it seems like what the state is trying to do, I'm talking about the greater state, sure, is that they're trying to like sort of like, you know, drive wedges, break it apart, which is what they do, right? And so last month, you know, on the raid they carried out, they arrested you know, four or five people and charged them with domestic terrorism.
Right.
I'm going to guess as a strategy to try and sort of like marginalize the people in the forest who are fighting.
Right.
And I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on that. And I have some more kind of questions about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think they're super clearly just these sort of retaliatory charges meant to scare people from coming to the forest, you know, to scare people from, you know, being willing to speak out. I think it is completely intended to drive a wedge, especially, you know, with probably organizations that, you know, are thinking more about their reputations in a certain sense. You know, maybe they don't want to go near something that has the label of terrorism. But it, you know, it of course actually makes it all the more urgent for organizations to speak out and to, you know, to be in solidarity with the movement, because, you know, they're also using those charges to demonize the entire movement, to justify the kind of violence, you know, that we saw on Wednesday, where they can say, well, hey, these people are quote unquote domestic terrorists, so, you know, we're going to go in and, you know, all bets are off, right? And, you know, on its face, it's so ridiculous to, you know, to charge these folks with domestic terrorism for living in a forest. But, you know, that's what they're doing. And I think that's sort of their end game.
You know, we've seen a lot of anti-protest legislation where they're, you know, criminalizing turning you know, simple acts of civil disobedience or direct action into felonies. Has Georgia recently passed similar legislation? I mean, it's a legislature is all Republican, and then there's a right wing, right winger in the governor's house. Is that the case here? Is that where those charges are coming from?
So right after Georgia has definitely done things like that, like right after the uprisings in either 2020 or 2021, they passed essentially like a Blue Lives Matter bill, around hate crime stuff for treatment of cops, which, you know, just absurd. This domestic terrorism law actually came out of, I believe it was passed in 2017, and it was modeled after the law that was passed after the Charleston church shooting. People at the time warned them, you know, it's this incredibly broad statute that basically gives them license to call any protester, you know, a domestic terrorist. And, you know, whether those charges stick, of course, is another question, but it just gives them, you know, incredibly broad license to pursue this kind of thing. And, you know, I think an important point here is that in the wake of tragedies like that, you often get support from liberals for, you know, new hate crimes legislation, domestic terrorism legislation, all of the talk that came out after the January 6th stuff. And, you know, that, like, this is what domestic terrorism legislation is used to prosecute, right? It's used to prosecute protesters and organizers on the left, not people on the right.
Yeah, 100%. And it's what they've done for many decades,
right.
Century. A whole other tangent. I've been like reading a book actually about the period during World War One and after World War One, where they came up with originally came up with some of that legislation to target people on the left, like Wadleys, wow, and radical unionists and immigrants, etc.
Right.
The four or five folks who were charged with domestic terrorism in December, they're out on bail now, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you? And then seven more people were arrested with that on Wednesday after they murdered Tort. Then they also arrested a number of people, including some on domestic terror charges.
Yep. And actually, the Atlanta Solidarity Fund announced on Twitter today that they've all had bond set, and the total bond amount for all the protesters together is $117,000. So Atlanta Solidarity Fund is a bail fund that's been active for a while, and they're raising money to bail folks out.
Well, we'll put that link in our show notes as well. Okay. And I'm sure, hopefully, a lot of groups who are signing the solidarity letter will be sharing that. Yeah.
Definitely.
My only other question, I'm on my last question, but I'd really like to hear how, you know, our audience is like left of center, people who are very interested in organizing, direct action, as well as the other topics we cover. But for our audience, we say this with lots of guests, but I really want the audience to listen when I ask, how can we support? And we'll put links in the show notes, but also if you have, if you want to just say a few things, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there are so many ways to plug in, whether it's, you know, people are holding vigils, you know, all over the place. People are, you know, holding demonstrations where they live, whether they're in Atlanta or not. Absolutely donating the Solidarity Fund, you know, signing on to the statements that are circulating, putting out statements on social and elsewhere, you know, anything that can be done to help, you know, of course, counter the narrative that, you know, the propaganda narratives that are being put out. There is an account online that accepts submissions from people who are on the ground, sort of like an umbrella account, and it's called @defendATLForest, which I'll send you the handle. And they've got, you know, they're sharing information all the time about different actions that are happening. You know, there's a protest tomorrow or a vigil tomorrow and tonight, if anyone's in Atlanta. Yeah, there's tons of ways to plug in, and I would say it'd be good to follow some of those accounts and sort of get plugged into what all is happening.
Okay, and we'll totally include all that in the show notes.
Cool.
Mike, I really appreciate you being here, especially with everything that's happened, that you're able to talk to our small little scrappy podcast.
Absolutely.
Folks, you've been listening to Micah, who's an Atlanta-based organizer, talking about the Atlanta Forest Defense Campaign, but then also the tragedy that happened around the murder of a forest defender by police. If you like what you're hearing, please check out Green and Red Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're viewing this on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button. And then also, if you want to support us more than that, go to our website, greenandredpodcast.org, and hit the support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenandredpodcast. Everyone out there, stay safe, misbehave, and we'll talk to you again soon.